welcome back to a very belated episode of Beyond the Fence. And I figured after a weekend at the Australian Grand Prix down in Melbourne, it felt only right to bring it back with a review of the weekend. And joining me, I might as well just say, as always at this point, considering I don't remember the last time you weren't on the show and we did one of these, Tim Ray is back again.
I'm back, although I'm not back from the Grand Prix. Back from watching it on TV.
No, yes, we didn't go together, as they say.
Mad invite.
Oh, did you want to drop the several $100 for the last minute? Not that I did. It was all... It's a media member, I was. Just invited as an influencer last minute.
Yeah, which garage did you stand in the back of?
My auntie's. Legitimately, I did stand in when I went to visit, about 2 hours away from the track. Considering, I guess Australia probably isn't known as one of the more entertaining races from a pure race perspective, a pretty entertaining weekend just through all the sessions. I guess we should probably start. There isn't really too much to go into from practice, but we have to talk about the big story of Alex Albon putting his Williams in the exact same part of the wall that he put it in last year.
Yeah, that was tough. What? No, go on. No, I was going to say, well, obviously, not necessarily that so much as what came out of it, right?
Well, that's what I was going to bring up, but yeah. What do you think about the... Because there's a few different angles you can look at it, right? But I guess just on a base level, the decision to swap drivers.
It's good, right? You have to take the most... I don't know, maximize your chance of points, right? Especially when you're a bottom team.
Yeah.
And I happened to... I mean, I wasn't searching for it, but I happened to catch an interview with James Vowles talking about that, and he's like, look, over the first three races, and he probably could have added last year as well, Albon is our chance of scoring points. You need to maximise that. There's a clear distinction between the top five teams and the bottom five teams in terms of pace, and the idea is that you pick up points where they drop it, meaning that places 6 through 10 are going to be decided by a handful of points, and then if you can pick them up this weekend, then that's... You need to maximise your chance of doing that. And I mean, no sort of love loss that had happened to Logan Sargeant anyway, who may or may... should or should not be on the grid as it is, but yeah.
Well, you're a big fan of Sargeant, aren't you?
I'm the biggest fan there is of the driver who... Again, he's... Because of the... Was it Gasly finished 13th, Bottas 14th, makes Logan 21st in the 20 driver championship again for the second year in a row.
Gasly came 17th. Oh, no, I'm looking at qualifying. Sorry, I've got the qualifying thing open in front of me. Yeah, obviously, Ollie Bearman subbing in for Sainz last week means... And scoring points, admittedly, as he should have.
Yes.
Yeah, 21st for the second year.
I mean, in the car that ends up winning this week. So, yes, he should have scored points.
I did see a snippet of the interview with James Vowles where he talks about how Logan Sargeant has greater maturity than I ever had at that age. And I'm like, well, you're obviously not going to say, no, he chucked a massive tantrum. He cracked the shits and he's off.
No, but he was like, he's like, James, I'm paying for this seat. I'm going to drive it.
More broadly, though, the actual rule, I feel like that's the other half of the argument. Do you actually think it should be allowed, though?
Well, I guess it's it closes, like, quote unquote, the race entries close once you race competitive sessions, right? So,
yeah, it's because you went to Parc Fermé at the start of qualifying.
Yeah.
Or when you leave the garage for qualifying.
And until then, I mean, if we're talking, because it's different, I guess, in the through the lens of like modern Formula One, when you look back through, I think third cars or spare cars was sort of phased out sort of early to mid 2000s, but certainly through the 90s and whatnot, there would be literal spare cars that if you binned your car, you'd be able to use that.
I feel like it's even been somewhat recent, like you'd have like some sort of skeleton car that was maybe well, like the pride, unless that's sort of a thing that happens if you have an upgrade for a circuit and you just kind of have the stuff lying around just in Scalextric boxes for it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, all this with the caveat being if this race was in Europe, they both would have raced because there would have been the accessibility to have that on hand. Evidently, because it's a flyaway race and probably the most major logistical nightmare to get stuff down here, right?
No, surely not.
Well, I mean, I think...
it's a logistical nightmare to get from Flinders Station to the bloody track, let alone...
I remember seeing, like, a feature once. I think that Sky did, like, you know, they do sort of... Like, the hour before the race is sort of like the... I don't want to say fluff pieces, but a lot of it, when it's interviews, is just sort of like the drivers do something with one of the presenters. But they had one where the presenters were talking about the logistics of F1, and this may have changed, and sort of like this is probably going back 6-7 years, whatnot. But they would talk about how when they're sending the kits out to Australia, they're putting it on a ship, and then it's sort of coming here, and then it goes back on the ship, and then they won't see those specific parts, and I guess the non-essential stuff for months. It'll be used in Mexico or something.
Yeah.
And they have like 4 or 5 of these sort of non-essential. And I think that did extend to car parts, more or less.
People.
Yeah, that's a bit rough on the wheel gun number 5. He's gone for 6 months. But they would have like 4 or 5 of these. 4 or 5 of these sets. And then it was because you can't get it from Australia to Japan in 2 weeks.
No.
And then expect it to be in all order. And obviously there's probably testing and stuff to do with that.
Yep.
But anyway, long way round to the point being that there would have been a spare chassis if it was a European race, probably even if it was a Middle Eastern race or maybe even a North American race. And I mean, I don't doubt that other teams probably would have brought them as well. So it's probably an element of getting you got caught sort of cutting corners cost wise.
It's the cost of doing business, especially when you are a fringe team as it is.
Yeah.
Like I imagine, well, Mercedes probably could have just gone down to the factory in Australia. I'm sure they could have repurposed something.
There is the element that there's the cost cap, but it's also, I guess, there are stuff, there's things that are also outside of that. I mean, the cost cap may be like common knowledge, but I don't think it's anywhere near as sort of transparent as, say, like the NBA salary cap. I've never really looked into it that much, but you just sort of, you know, you hear people talk about it on the TV and you just sort of trust that, like,
yeah.
Those inner workings are... I mean, I would be interested in hearing about it, but clearly the producers of Drive to Survive don't agree.
So I just googled it. The cost cap for this year is allegedly $135 million, I assume, American. I don't think I'm measuring this in New Zealand dollars or anything. Which is the same as last year. It's actually gone down. But not by much.
Do they have a spot? They have a spot track? How much?
Yeah.
Do they have anything stretched and waved?
Well, yeah. RB have got Nick De Vries on the books for the next 5 years. I don't know what the crossover is of people who know what the NBA stretch provision is and people that watch Formula One.
No, I was going to say, like, I can't believe Sauber is still paying Nick Heidfeld.
They're paying Charles Leclerc to race against them.
No, I think that's the Venn diagram's probably got a bit of surface area, but yeah.
You're right in that once, like, everything is non-competitive, everything is practice, effectively, up until you roll out of the garage in qualifying. But there's also part of me that, if not for anything more than just looking at it from Logan Sargeant's point of view, like, my teammate's the one that's crashed it. I didn't crash it. Like, what the hell? you know.
Oh, well, there's certainly that element to it.
Like, Logan, that's, we know, that's like, what we, made it fun. We know he's, yeah, well, yeah, like, we know Alex has put the car in the wall, and you didn't, but we trust him to not do it again more than we trust you to not do it for the first time.
Yeah. It's also interesting sort of writing on the wall, right? Like, if you had to pick one of the seats that are going to be available for next year, thinking potentially the second William seat, and it's like, well, this is sort of indicative of that.
Yeah.
It's hard, I guess it's hard not to see it like that, and I guess if you're Logan Sargent, it's hard not to take it that way, regardless of the reassurances you would get from internal management, like...
Yeah. Well,
come on. Yeah.
Well, I compare it to the situation of Mick Schumacher last year, right? Last year? 2 years ago. Where he was obviously in the sport as much for his name and his sponsorship value as for his driving ability.
Yep.
And that does only get you so far, even though we know there's just as many pay drivers on the grid as there are merit drivers. That's probably an unfair statement, but, you know. Sargent's kind of the same thing, obviously not with the name recognition, but the whole idea of an American on the grid, they're expanding, they've got 3 races on the calendar now, and who knows what's stopping them from, like, bringing back a race in California or Detroit or New York or whatever. But at some point, you know, it ended with Mick Schumacher, and that's the son of, like, the best driver ever, or second best driver ever at worst. It's all Jordan LeBron. Yeah. So what's stopping them from just cutting loose this American? You know, there's other Americans at the lower categories as well that I'm sure deserve a chance.
There's also an element of that. It's like, I'm not... which it's probably an obtuse thing to say about a sport like F1, where it's like, I'm not sure what the marketing has there been a positive marketing value of having Logan Sargent in F1 versus just F1 the product itself? Like, does it matter that there's an American driver if he's 21st, or is it like, well, it's not going to kick off in the US unless there's an American driver contending for wins?
Yeah, I don't think Americans are really enamored with the idea of, like, being represented on the global stage by the worst person in the sport.
Yeah, like, there's that, like...
there's that whole egotism behind it.
Of course. I guess you bring up the Mick Schumacher example, and that's probably hard to quantify as well, because I'm sure that it's, without being in Germany or in Europe at all, probably hard to quantify what that was worth to the sponsors. Maybe you're about to bring this up. I was going to say a small element was that he was the F2 champion, whereas Logan Sargent
wasn't. I was not going to say that.
Okay.
I was just going to say, if Haas, who's a team on who just always seems to be in financial freefall,
yeah,
can cut loose a guy like Schumacher with his, it's all like, who knows?
Well, I guess maybe I'd extend my point even further. It's like, because I'm not sure necessarily whether F1 derived the benefit in the US commercially of having even Haas being an American team. It wasn't that big jump that you expected until we started to look at things like the Netflix deal and the fact that Liberty Media are an American company. Probably these things are elements, and there is an effect to it, and obviously that would quantify somehow, but I'm not thinking it's probably the crazy leaps and jumps that maybe people think it is initially.
No. Have we spent too long on Logan Sargent? For a week?
Probably, but again, we're talking about race. Sports business, I'll keep going.
Considering this is, like, effectively a wrap-up of the weekend in racing, it's probably a bit...
Yes, I don't think people are not tuning in for the thesis on F1 economics.
Also, he didn't contribute much to the weekend in racing, did he?
No. I wasn't going to say unfortunately, but, I mean, was there any difference? He finished 20th.
To be fair to Albon, qualified 12th. But with qualifying...
He did what he does, right? He finished 11th and then sort of fights for points sporadically.
Yeah, but with qualifying, and this is... we're about to bring up the broader discussion of pivoting from someone that neither of us really care that much about in Logan Sargent to the other end of that spectrum. And if it wasn't for that small issue of breaking the rules. Daniel Ricciardo makes it through Q1. Alas.
Yeah, pretty comfortably as well, like, from memory. He got up to 11th or 12th.
Yeah, obviously pushing shit uphill to get to Q3, but...
I remember saying to you at the time, I was sending you a message at the time, that they didn't raise it on the broadcast, but I remember seeing it, and he ran awfully wide.
Yeah.
And then I forgot about it. Within the space of like a minute 15, I forgot about it. And then it said, oh, lap time delay. I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
it looked pretty blatant.
At the track, the deflation. Because I probably should elaborate this, where I was sitting was between turn 13 and 14. So across from pit entry, last two corners of the track. And what you see the cars sweep around that bend. You can actually kind of see them on the other side of the lake through the stands on the other side. You can just see a little zip. And then they sweep around the corner, they curve around down to the straight, pretty much at full speed. And so you're waiting like 5 seconds, really, for their time to come up on the screen. And obviously the camera was following Ricciardo on the big screen, and then he zips past us and his time comes up and the crowd just goes up as one. And everyone thinks, like, oh, the boy's back, he's made it through Q1 in this glorified Ford Pinto. And then... yeah, the deflation. The second, like, I think my sister had it up on her phone, like, the live timings or something. And, or my dad had, like, nudged me. He's like, oh, Ricciardo's track limits. And I looked up at the board and his name had been pushed back down to 18th. So, I know, obviously, track limits is track limits. And it obviously helped his lap. But, to me, that lap showed that the RB... We obviously know it's not the worst car on the grid. Like, it's clearly got more pace than the Sauber, than the... I mean, I don't know what's going on with the Alpines. And...
Yeah.
And the Haas.
I think, like, it's sort of there, thereabouts with the Haas, it seems like.
Yeah, the Haas seems like...
The first three.
I would say the Sauber's probably the clear worst car on the grid at the moment.
Just, I suppose, just sort of depending on the Alpine.
Ignoring the second Williams.
Yeah. I mean, I would trust that the Alpine is probably going to get a little bit better versus the Sauber moving forward.
There's just too much money behind the Alpine for it to not be better.
I mean, they should. I talk about that when they finish like 8th.
Yeah.
The 18th. The Sauber have got... They got to sort out the pit stops before they sort out anything on the car. Never mind qualifying. They can't race. it's just insane. Even... I'm not sure whether you... Again, I'm dovetailing. But... They started cutting to the Sauber pit stops because they're like, oh, they've done a good... Ted said, like, oh, they've done a good one. And then... I think it was Bottas came out of the pit, and then you could see like a wheel nut like rolling across the pit lane. And Ted was like, "Oh, they didn't have a 35-second pit stop." Yeah, there's something like the cross threading of the wheel guns, some sort of issue that's just making them super uncompetitive. Besides the fact that the car is not the greatest either, it looks all right. It looks nice.
Does it?
Well, it's there's a stunning lack of paint in F1, so any color is good color.
I don't know, black and yellow. It's a bit too Wiz Khalifa for me.
Just picked it up. See, it's like an electric green. The Sauber.
Ah, well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I straight away I realized.
As a colorblind man.
Yeah. So, what's the best looking car to you then?
Oh, that's obviously the Ferraris.
Is the Ferrari the Ferrari color? What's it?
Yeah, it's
this famous Ferrari gray.
A vibrant purple. Yeah. So back to Ricciardo. I had a lot of promise, despite the 18th. Obviously, you're kind of hoping for a little bit of something ahead of you. But I thought he was going to be a little bit more competitive in the race. And then you fast forward to the race and he's just nowhere again.
Yeah.
Like, he just couldn't overtake anyone. And he never really looked close to doing it either. Like, he caught... I think he had an early pit because he started on the hards. No, he started on the softs, sorry.
Why?
But yeah. Yeah. Well, so I think the first eight or nine... I'm trying to remember now what the fine men over at GPTV were saying over the loudspeaker at the track. But I think, yeah, the first nine or so cars started on the mediums, and then a couple behind them were on the softs.
But the broadcasts were saying that, like, you know, they're baking on the grid here. They're, you know, the harder the tyre, the better.
Yeah, so the predominant tyre was the medium for the start. But yeah, Ricciardo on the softs, and then I think it lasted about five laps before he bunned those off.
I think it's maybe this is extremely just sort of selective bias, but I feel like in this sort of modern era of F1, particularly under these regulations, where the slower cars opt for the tyre to give them an edge at the beginning, has almost never worked. It seems to be always you're far better off trying, like the Albon 58 laps last year. If you're in a car that doesn't have the performance, you need to find time, and the way you're going to find time is by nursing tyres and having one less pit stop. Obviously, probably impractical this year given the conditions.
Yeah.
But it sort of baffled me again. I felt like McLaren's still making the decisions for Ricciardo.
I mean, you always say when a car starts down that low, it's... You know, you applaud them doing something different, but different doesn't necessarily mean cavalier to the point of suicide.
Of course, and when you start on the softest tyre, then you're limiting your window in which you're asking for something to shake the grid up happens. Like the softs, you know, we're talking single-digit laps, you're asking for something to happen, and then something doubly to benefit you.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, in general, the Ricciardo stuff, I mean, it's somewhat disappointing. It's sort of 12th out of nowhere, but it doesn't feel like 12th.
Yeah, I actually forgot he was 12th.
Yeah. I suppose it's just sort of in the shadow of Tsunoda having a really good weekend, finishing 7th after the Alonso penalty. But even then, it's interesting to see the sort of conjecture around Ricciardo.
Yep.
I don't necessarily believe the New Zealand Herald.
Oh, what? I was going to bring that up, actually. What, you're saying that the New Zealand Herald doesn't have sources deep inside the walls of Red Bull where
they... It's also they're like quoting the one guy that will give you like a terrible quote.
Who was Marco that? Marco, yeah.
Marco will give you an awful quote and people just run with it. He's from a different era.
I don't doubt there's pressures, but ultimatum's probably not the... Who comes in?
Well, it'll obviously be Lawson, right? He's waiting in the wings. It was somewhat of a surprise that Lawson was overlooked given his... brief results last year, right? But that said, Tsunoda has looked decent this... Again, it's mostly this weekend stands out. You know, it's not necessarily Bahrain or Saudi Arabia. Although I guess it's sort of been power tracks thus far. Maybe, I mean, pretty bold to say that Visa Cash App RB would be hiding something, but maybe these haven't been the type of circuits that are going to benefit them. But I think overall it's just a matter of the car is not good enough. The top five teams have... There's now two sort of midfield packs rather than one on the grid. And RB is certainly in that one, you know, the second set. And then,
yeah,
I guess theoretically, if everybody in the top... In the, you know, the top five teams finishes, then you're talking about 11th.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Well, you probably get 10th if George Russell does George Russell things, but...
Yeah. Well, it's similar to what we were saying with Vals, right? He's saying, like, look, the opportunities for points are going to be slim, so you need to pick up when the top teams give you the opportunity to. And that's how I see sort of Ricardo's season being. I guess there's an element of people want change really quickly, and there's probably an element to that also of the fact that the grid didn't change at all. Look how excited people got over Oliver Bearman. People didn't know who he was, but it was like, oh, a new driver, because the grid stayed exactly the same for like the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, one weekend turns Ricardo's this whole, it seems very abrupt considering, you know, it's a handful of points he's going to grab at one moment. We'll completely turn it around. It's not, this isn't like the sort of his McLaren battle, quote unquote, with Norris, where it was like, you know, even when Ricardo won a race, it didn't matter. He was like still comprehensively behind Norris. I don't think it's anywhere near that point as of yet. Although that being said, Tsunoda has done really well.
Yeah, like Ricardo won a race, and there was still like rumors for the season after.
The gulf in consistency between them.
Whereas Tsunoda
has scored once.
I remember that you made the point when we spoke about this last time that, well, whenever, yeah, it would have been last time, about how the whole idea that the car was basically a car that Norris himself had developed over 3-4 years that Ricardo was walking into. And yep. there might be I don't know how much developmental impact drivers would have at Visa, Cash App, RB, which effectively acts as the satellite team for Red Bull. But
that's the thing that's most shocking. It's like, you would have thought the team that is effectively Red Bull B, how are they not the second best car on the grid? How have they never been that? I know there is sort of like, I want to say antitrust, but there's like sharing rules in F1 that sort of nicks that. But it's always been interesting.
I did think about that.
They're not like 1 year. I was going to call them Toro Rosso or AlphaTauri, or how do they not show up 1 year at testing and be the clear out and out second best car?
I don't know. It's an interesting point. Yeah, Tsunoda is now 11th in the Drivers' Championship with 6 points, tied with Ollie Bearman. who I think scored at 0 points in F2 this weekend.
Awful weekend for him in F2, just quietly. He also, given that he didn't compete last week or in the previous race, he also had to forfeit his points for winning pole. So it's been really bad in terms of the F2 championship, although probably matters the least to him on the entire F2 grid now, because he's got the runs on the board in F1 now, and people trust him in that machinery that he probably doesn't necessarily have to perform as well in F2 this season.
Yeah. Do you want to quickly talk about F2? Because I know you like F2.
I love F2. Although, as I said, I'm questionable this year on F2. I'm not sure the quality of the grid. I don't think it's as good.
I did like my little joke, well, with the reference of when I saw Zane Maloney for the first time.
Repeat it for the people.
I just said he had a bit of the Brendan Nashes about him. I don't know how I can explain that and not get cancelled.
Like
when I heard there was a driver from Barbados on the grid, I looked him up and I was like, okay, wait. Interesting. Let's leave it at that.
Well, he's a championship leader.
Yeah.
Sort of dining out on the double victory, although the double victories in F2 are not to be scoffed at.
You mean sprint feature?
Yeah.
Well, we nearly had another one this weekend, but there was a penalty in the sprint.
Yeah, I guess theoretically. Theoretically it was, right? He crossed the finish line first in both of them.
Yeah, but Isaac Hadjar, I mean, yeah, just yeah, happened to cut across like 17 cars at the start of the sprint.
That was pretty harsh, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I was, because they were talking about it at the track. They were saying throughout the race that Hadjar was kind of the third car involved with, who else was it? It's not coming up on my thing.
I can't even remember now. It was a Bortoleto. And
for some reason, the sprint race results aren't going all the way down.
No, it was a sprint race, right?
Yeah.
It was a Bortoleto one for sure, right?
sure they're not here, so like they're not on the top 18. Because yeah, for some reason it cuts off at 18 and it won't let me see the rest of the... Yeah, anyway. Anyway. Yeah, causing the collision. What do you get? 10 seconds? 5 seconds.
Yeah, put it back to 6th.
Yeah, 5 seconds you would have got. Bit harsh, but yeah, I think that... Yeah, sorry, my original point. They assumed it would just be deemed a racing incident. Because yeah, obviously the start of the race, everyone is kind of cutting across each other anyway.
Well, that was Alex Brundle on the call was pretty convinced that it was just a racing incident, and I mean it's immediately it's a very odd incident. You never usually see cars sort of have contact that quickly and then emerge into sort of the pit exit.
Yeah. Anyway, that's nothing.
Anyway.
No, yeah, overall, but yeah, Hadjar bounced back to win the feature, so...
Yeah, that was decent. Sort of slow start to the season for Kimi Antonelli. He's probably the most hyped driver on the grid, obviously, sans Behrmann, I guess, now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everyone's saying he's the heir apparent for that Mercedes seat.
Yeah, although given that he's, I mean, he skipped F, theoretically he should be in F3 this year, so he sort of skipped a grade as it is. That's probably where you can get away with sort of how quickly is he going to sort of pick up the F2 pace and as a sort of way to judge how quickly he would pick up F1.
Yeah.
I think in for that overall, he would... Yeah. Not that Mercedes is the top car at the moment, but it's like you've got to put him in a Williams first before the Mercedes seat. Probably yep. Even more so with the signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just a quick note on F3. They were talking up the two Australians in the F3 field, and one of them finished 27th in the sprint and then got crashed out in the feature.
That was a shame. With respect to the drivers in F3... It really is like who has the money, and then that sort of that gets sorted out onto who moves into F2, and then I suppose if you got enough money, you end up buying an F1 team. But certainly, I'd notice with F3. As much as I love F2, I can't do F3. It's just talk to me when you're serious. Yeah,
they look a little. They look kind of cute. Just tottering around the track.
Even with the,
it's just a field of Brums.
Even when Piastri was in F3, I was watching very little F3 because it's like you don't know what's real and what's not in F3. I mean, even frankly, the same thing in F2, to be honest. But then you can start to see sort of the glimpses, certainly with the guys that are like out and out talents, Russell, Leclerc, Piastri, Norris.
Yeah.
So yeah, F3 is... I'll usually skip F3. F3 is often on too early, which is odd to say when it's like a European race. But F2 is that nice sort of sweet spot. You're talking somewhere between about 6 and 8 or 9 p.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah. Okay, back to the what matters. Before we get to the actual race, I did want to touch on a lap record in qualifying for Max Verstappen. Track record, sorry.
Normal evolution of the cars, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So the first man to break the 115 barrier.
Actually, probably the added caveat as well with the Albert Park circuit is given that the track changes. Was it the first year was last year, right, where they made the track itself has become incredibly quicker with removing that sort of second sector, making that so much faster.
Yep.
That was actually why I thought you were at turn 15, because I'd forgot that they got rid of... I was looking at an old map.
But yeah, Max Verstappen, lap record in qualifying, and then his car blows up in the race.
Yeah, it's finally, praise be, the non-Max winner.
The first retirement he'd had since it was sometime in 22, I think.
Australia 2022. So literally 2 years.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's stupid. It's just silly how reliable as well they've been. I guess when you look at periods of dominance previously in F1, you would always, they're not going to win 15 races in a row. And then they sort of never do. I suppose Max doesn't either. But like he gets to sort of 8 and 9 regularly. Because there's been the sort of historical reliability issues in F1. But now Red Bull sort of got to the point where it was... he's so far ahead where he's not going to have racing incidents, so it's going to have to be the car. And then an interesting thing as well, because it's... he described it as like driving with the brakes on. And that's what ultimately sort of put them on fire, and then it like exploded in the pit lane.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that he was still so competitive in, I guess, the first two laps.
Yeah.
You're talking about this catastrophic failure, and he was still faster than the rest of the field for at least the initial period until the car had to literally burn.
But like, the way the crowd went up
that was everybody at home as well.
No, I know, but it's kind of weird because they're not cheering because they don't like Max. It's just, oh my god, we might actually get something interesting for once.
Yeah, I think it was good that happened after Sainz had overtook him as well, because it was like, oh, okay, hello, we've got something interesting here.
Although, I guess we'll never know unless it happened on the broadcast and I've missed it, but was Max already having those issues when Sainz overtook him?
Well, he says that he'd had the issues since the start of the race. It happened literally when they finished the parade lap and then just before the start. So, yes, but no. So I guess that it had got to a point where it was hampering performance so much, because Sainz was so much quicker. We'd cut back and then suddenly Sainz is...
2 seconds within a second down the road.
And, well, not quite. He's like going side by side. And then, yeah.
The first cheer for... Because obviously Australia, Melbourne, a lot of Tifosi in Melbourne. That's the Italian stronghold. A lot of Ferrari cheers went up. Me and my old Fernando Alonso Ferrari shirt.
Ferrari have always been good in Melbourne.
But then, yeah, just... It was such a weird reaction, like, just watching... I guess a dude's car blowing up and catching fire, and then everyone sees the smoke, and everyone's just like, "Yes!"
It's sort of ironic that the race might have turned out better if he'd continued, like if it hadn't been as critical, and then we got some sort of battle between him and Sainz, because I guess we got a winner other than Max, but race was relatively...
That's what I was going to say. The actual calm. Race itself,
yeah.
Rather uneventful.
Yeah.
I mean,
but overall, it's still enough, like, because it was the science figure, and he controlled it.
Yeah.
I
mean, there was a few little scraps around the final points positions, you know, Magnussen, Albon.
Yeah. I think it's still, irrespective of the four DRS zones, and maybe that makes it harder in some respect, it's still difficult to overtake in Melbourne.
Yeah, well, I mean, where do you really do it? The main straight, and then I'd say between 2 and 3 is probably not low enough.
Yeah.
So you're really looking at,
it's just, you need to be so much faster.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of the modern era.
It's either main straight or the outside after, like that big sweeping, the third zone.
Yeah. So, basically,
before turn 9.
Verstappen, yeah.
Yeah.
The issue at the present generation of Formula One cars, they're so big. Also, I would really like to see regulations going forward where we sort of reduce the size of the car, even the power of the cars. But that sort of goes against the spirit of Formula One in terms of that, you know, the cars are always going to be faster and...
Yeah.
It's the whole idea of the sport is pushing the edge of the technological barrier. So I get that.
I do like that the detection zone for the Sector 2 and 3 DRS section is like 3 turns away.
Yeah, you essentially get the double.
Well, it's twice. You get double twice.
Yeah. But, that, I mean, again, does it really matter? It's, yeah. It's in the current... Even... I suppose it's skipping a bit, but, like, getting to the end. Like, I'm not sure whether Russell would have overtaken Alonso at all. Would he have even been able to do it? I'm not so sure. Like, there wasn't many out-and-out overtakes. It was a pretty standard F1 race.
That was the battle for, what, sixth, right?
Sixth at the end, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there weren't many overtakes at all.
No.
It was more just... It was a strategy race, and then that leads me to the next point of... And of McLaren, who I feel like we always talk about McLaren in terms of strategy, but probably vindicated this time, as much as I might not like it.
No, yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it was there, right? Where the beginning stage of the race, so Max was already out, Sainz wasn't terribly far ahead, and then it was sort of Leclerc, Norris, and Piastri were all that sort of group,
yeah.
And it was pretty clear that there was an undercut opportunity. That said, I think given conditions and tyre degradation, that was probably always going to backfire somewhat.
Yeah.
I mean, they ended up sort of doing it by mistake, right, to react to Russell going in early.
Yeah.
So it did sort of happen. I think out and out, though, Norris was better than Piastri this weekend.
Yeah, I'm just looking at pit stop strategy here. Pit stop summary, sorry. Yeah, Ricciardo pits on lap 5.
the soft tyres.
Yeah, but yeah, I can't remember what Albon and Joe started on, but that was the lap after, and then yeah, the two Mercedes were the two laps after that. So Lewis also started on the softs. He comes in after the 7 laps.
Yeah. I don't think you're getting the benefit if you're not in a top car to be able to get the moves done early enough, and then you know you bank on that track position.
Are you calling Mercedes not a top car?
Well considering,
no.
yeah, I guess not. But I mean, considering where he started, you're not going to make up the. I guess what was the plan for Mercedes? You've got to try and they. I guess as even irrespective of the points we've had this year, what it seems like is that Mercedes is either the third or the fourth best car. Probably edging towards fourth. Like it seemed
like... I think
the
McLaren is better than them right now.
Yeah, yeah. It at least on the tracks we've had thus far.
Yeah.
It seemed like the Mercedes was probably better than the Aston. Like, Russell probably was faster than Alonso. Alonso was up there given the VSC, right? Like, otherwise, Russell was... On merits.
Oh, yeah, I mean, ahead. I'm looking at the results now. Like Leclerc 2 seconds behind Carlos, but really, that's all skewed.
Well, that was managed, I think, anyway. Like,
Well, no, but really, the gap previous, it was, like, closer to 5.
Yeah.
But yeah,
like, I was saying, like, what was the end goal for Lewis? Like, you're going to try and finish in front of the Astons.
Yeah. Well,
it's
yeah,
like
Lewis
if you don't get them at the beginning, then that's sort of. Like, and it's, I mean, Lewis on the broadcast, on the radio, was saying, like, oh, I think he was behind Perez, and he had tyre advantage, and not necessarily tyre advantage, we had warm tyres. Perez coming straight out of the pits, didn't get his opportunity at the first corner, and then Perez just blows, like, past him. And then he's going for the radio, he's like, oh, they're too quick, I can't do anything. So yeah, probably a bit of that for Mercedes this year being, yeah, at least at the moment, the fourth, probably the fourth car.
Well, I forgot what I was going to say now.
Well, I would also preface that with, I believe in Mercedes more than any other car in a team
yep.
to turn it around or make improvements mid-season. I think we've seen that in each season that they've started poorly.
Yeah. Well, Lewis is always, like, we always joke about Lewis. We every race whinges to Bono that the car is about to catapult him.
Like, yeah. Well, Max does that as well.
Like, I know. Well, yeah, he was doing that during qualifying, then he just breaks the track record. So
yeah. It's like, oh, the car's not doing a new lap record.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Speaking of fastest laps, just quietly, Ricciardo fastest lap than Hamilton and Verstappen.
Interesting.
I mean, Verstappen was three laps.
When was Ricciardo's last stop? I can't even remember. I don't want to remember. Did he have like fresher tyres at the end on lighter fuel?
So Ricciardo stopped on lap 5 and then again on lap 29.
Interesting.
But yeah, his fastest lap was lap 46. And obviously Verstappen, I'm taking the piss because that was his last lap before his car blew up.
Yeah.
And his fastest lap was like 2 seconds slower than everyone else.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, obviously high fuel load at the beginning.
Yeah, yes. But yeah, Ferrari. I think everyone kind of was waiting for Ferrari to Ferrari it up. I think every time one of them pulled into the pits, there was a certain anguish and angst in the stands.
I feel a bit safer
as Luigi and Guido approached.
Well, that doesn't check out because Luigi and Guido are good at pit stops.
True. Are you saying there's more confidence under Fred than Mattia?
Well, at least through the... I didn't feel like... Once Max was out, I felt like Ferrari were definitely going to win.
Oh, yeah. But barring, you know, catastrophe.
But, like, that couldn't be said previously. Well, you say that barring catastrophe, but, like, I didn't feel like that was going to be a catastrophe.
Ah, okay. Ah, there's always back of the mind.
Of course.
Get the penne.
Yes, load the penne. That's what we say for Lewis. It's still flour and eggs. Science, the equivalent of the quarterback game manager.
Yeah.
Again, another.
Calm down, Cam Newton.
Another, like, similar to the Singapore performance, really. Again, it didn't really seem too much in doubt. So the it's not quite the same, but I would say comparable to Ricciardo's win with McLaren, where it was like, we've got somebody new at the front, but it's just sort of, and it's like, you know, maybe you expect Perez is in the fastest car, he should chase him down, and he's just not there. So then it's just sort of managed at the front. But that was more, I guess, Ricciardo and Lando out front. You were saying,
Monza, like, 21.
Yeah, where as you were saying, like, it didn't seem like Charles was going to win or contest. Like, that's what I mean. It was sort of like a Verstappen-esque win from, maybe without the margin.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, closing the door.
Yeah, it didn't feel like Leclerc was really going to get there. It didn't feel like Norris was going to get Leclerc either for that point, so.
No, it felt sort of holding station. It is a bit of a shame for Charles because, like, he is the guy that's there more often than not on the front row. And then, like, the race that Max finally has a problem. Like, the other, like, you know, we talk about 9 races in a row that Max wins. It's like, Charles is there qualifying front row, or he's there to pick up the crumbs, and he just, like, you know, Max wins easily, so Charles finishes second or third. This was the weekend, and then it was Carlos Sainz on the front row to pick up the win.
Do you remember when Leclerc's last win was?
Well, obviously it wasn't last year. I can only remember poles. I was going to say like Azerbaijan, but yeah, like that was just a random pole like 2 years ago. Was it 3? It would have been, what, 22?
Yep.
I mean, I can't remember specifically.
It's earlier in the year.
Oh, wait, was it Australia 2022? When Max
Sorry, it's my bad. It's middle of the year.
Oh. I thought I had it.
No. Didn't Lewis win that one? Perez won that one.
Which one?
Australia 22. Who won that one?
I thought, the one where Max retired, Charles won. Which is ironic considering I'm saying that doesn't happen, that it happened then.
But no, that wasn't his last win.
I mean, I can't remember. He doesn't have many wins. Oh, when I say many, how many he's got? Five or six?
Five.
Yeah. How many? He's got like 20 poles.
Didn't look. Oh, it's Austria, 22. To put you out of your misery.
Thank you. Oh, at the Red Bull Ring too. Did it in the home. He stole home court advantage.
Yes, he has 23 poles and 5 wins. Yeah, I was actually surprised that was only Sainz's 3rd win.
Yes and no. All of his wins have been really memorable. He had the Silverstone win, the Singapore one, obviously, like that I talked earlier, like that sort of game management win, and then this one as well. I think he's got the same number of wins as Charles now, since they were both teammates. Ferrari, so they're both 3 apiece.
Well, Sainz joined Ferrari after, didn't he? So,
no, but I'm saying, like, since they've been teams.
Yeah, I just realised as I've said that, like, I have no idea how many Charles won before.
I think, a couple. With the first year, the year with Vettel.
Because Sainz joined Ferrari, what, 21?
22 or 21?
21. But you did touch on the last point I wanted to make on the race, and that was Sergio Perez just being nowhere.
Yeah. Yep.
It's kind of funny that, like, everyone's talking about, like, it's an open trial for the Red Bull seat for next year, basically. And is it going to be Yuki? Is it going to be Ricardo? Is it going to be someone else, or is it going to be Perez? And it's like, well, objectively, Perez is obviously having the best season, but he's also like the one who inspires the least confidence.
Yeah, because he's also like sort of, I guess, politically pleasing, because Max can win 17 races without sort of. I was thinking earlier about, like, imagine if they put, like, Fernando Alonso in the Red Bull seat, like, the absolute sort of cross-center rivalry we'd have between Max and Alonso. And, like, how quickly that would sour, and then every race would just be this, like, dirty tricks. like a Mario Kart red shell type affair.
So a little bit like Weber Vettel.
I think it'd even be even more competitive than that. Like
Ocon Gasly.
I'm trying to think of the set. Like, it's sort of, there isn't really, from what I'm imagining, like a modern example.
No. Well, you made the point on Sunday that Bottas wins that race.
You know, I thought about that afterwards, and I was like, maybe necessarily not. As Rosberg wins that race, Bottas is.
Well, there's a rivalry. There's the modern example.
Even then, though, they're good mates, but. But yeah, they got a bit.
Well, they weren't at the time.
Yeah. Oh, but like, World Championship in the middle. I think, Rosberg wins that race. Bottas an excellent qualifier. That's the one thing on, like, Perez, right? We're talking about the second guy in the top car. Bottas was usually there. There would be weekends where he shows up and then he'd out-qualify Lewis, right? That doesn't happen with Perez to Max, right?
No, Perez, like, what's his average qualifying position this year? To be like 4 or 5. Oh, well, this year, 3 races, but even going back to last year.
Well, I mean, the number of Q3s that he missed last year, right? It's borderline unacceptable for the guy who is, you know, the presumptive second place in the championship.
Yeah, he probably, won a lot of Driver of the Day. It's just by virtue of his shit qualifying.
Well, that's the Albon. I remember when Albon was in the Red Bull, and then, Albon sort of got the love for it, but then Gasly didn't.
Same as when George Russell won, like, the award for most laps, most overtakes or laps, whatever it was, like most laps gained by overtaking, whatever it was, and they're like, "Is that because you started last every week?" Like, yep.
I thought you were going to be like most. I think Russell had the one where it was like at qualifiers, teammate.
Not most laps by overtake, most positions gained just over the course
positions
of a
gained,
race.
Yeah. Well, I even think, like, Perez was, like, one of the... When the last time they showed that, like, Perez was one of the leaders. It's like, yeah, no shit. She's an absolute rocket from the back.
another Mario Kart reference.
But, like, that's the thing, that Perez is the unproblematic choice.
He's the happy beta.
Yeah, it's not gonna... rock the boat, having him there. And it's just, that would be the one thing where it's like, I'm not sure if they're going to replace him with somebody who's going to contend with Max immediately. Unless maybe if they lost the constructors' titles somehow, then you're talking about maybe Red Bull, maybe people up top are like, hey, what's going on? We need to fix this.
Well, what if Max goes to Mercedes?
Well, I guess that would be the other thing where it's like, okay, well, if that happens, then you instantly get rid of Perez as well, right? And then you sort of build from the ground up. I mean, if that happens, what do you go? Sainz, Alonso?
Well, I don't know what the contract situation is, but my dad was like, Mercedes are mad if they don't just get Sainz back in, or get Sainz in.
Well, it makes sense. And then what we're talking about earlier with Kimi Antonelli, like, even if he is the F1 prodigy, like, I guess people are forgetting very quickly that George Russell was the same sort of thing with the same pedigree, and he got put in the Williams. They could have very easily put him in the Mercedes early enough.
Also Lance Stroll. Like, everyone on the grid has effectively, like, in terms of race winners,
yeah,
at top teams, have started in the quote-unquote shit boxes. Like, Max pretty did, much. Like, what, two races at Toro Rosso before?
Yeah, well, you still cut your teeth, right?
Yeah, but Max was at Toro Rosso. Lewis started at...
Well, he started at McLaren.
McLaren, that's probably, like, the one.
And they contended... He's the absolute anomaly.
Yeah, right? But even going back, Bottas started at Williams, Ricciardo... Carlos Sainz, they were all at Toro Rosso.
Well, Ricciardo, even before that, he was in absolute... He was in the HRT. He was riding his bike. He was in the HRT.
I guess Lando is another one. Like, Lando and Oscar, but even McLaren isn't...
McLaren wasn't what McLaren is, yeah.
Yeah, McLaren now is not what McLaren... Like, the Lewis McLaren.
Yeah.
Like, Charles Leclerc started at the Sauber.
Yep, Alonso Minardi.
Alonso started 1,000 years ago, so I didn't know.
Alonso started so long ago.
He started when I was in kindergarten.
What was Alonso's first race? Was that 02 or 01?
01.
Yeah, so it was literally before I even started. The first race I watched was 02. It's crazy.
I think it was 01. I feel like I've seen.
Yeah, it's 01.
Yeah, good. But yeah, so like, it would buck a huge trend if they just chucked this kid straight into the Mercedes.
Absolutely. And then he would, like, the F2 performance at the moment isn't there. And they've got to make a decision by sort of the middle of the year, I would assume. I don't think...
No.
They're going to go too much longer with Sainz not knowing, and sort of being the free agent. I've seen a lot of things after he's won the race, obviously, and rightly so, like, oh, this guy's super underrated. How the hell does he not have a seat for next year? It's like, well...
He's going to get a seat.
Yes and no. It's like 7 days out of 7 days you sign Lewis Hamilton. I mean, like... Like,
age doesn't come into it?
No.
Okay.
Alonso's 1,000. It doesn't matter. People still talk about him like he's this deity.
Also, Perez, sneaky old.
Yeah. He's been around.
He's 34 this year. Ricardo's 35 this year.
Everybody's all the childhood heroes getting old.
Like, Lewis is 40 next year.
Yeah. Well, what's Alonso? 43, 44?
40. I've literally got Wikipedia open. If you let me scroll to the top, hopefully the scrolling isn't coming through the microphone. Like, 42, yeah.
42. But, like, yes, you absolutely sign Lewis Hamilton with absolutely no reservation that it's a bad move. Even if he's not Lewis Hamilton, it's still worth it. Because with respect to science, and, you know, he's getting his flowers now, but he's not...
Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton.
He's not Charles Leclerc, really.
He's performed really well against him, but... No, he's still, like, over one lap, Charlotte's faster. And I don't think that's necessarily in dispute.
You put all things Well, actually, technically, this is probably the first time in his career that he's not being replaced by Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah. That's always sort of been... I was thinking about this as well. It's like, that's been the issue for Sainz. He's never been thrown out of the team because he's not performing. It's just been that there has been a driver with more pedigree than him that's been available, and then it's like, that's the logical move to make for all of the stops, basically.
And twice it was Ricciardo.
Yeah. I guess the different version of Ricciardo, you know.
Well, I said
pedigree, so that does check out.
I mean, 8-time race winner. That's exactly. As many as Leclerc and Sainz combined.
Exactly. So it's not a knock on Sainz at all. That's why I said, like, oh, this guy's so underrated. How does he not have a... Like, you know, people have got to start respecting him and whatnot. It's like, yeah, but the F1 grid is a game of musical chairs, and then you've got, like, notable obstacles, like we were talking about with Perez, right?
Yeah. Well, that's effectively... Before we get into, just at the very start, there's effectively 19 Formula One seats and one Stroll seat.
Yeah.
So, right off the bat, that's 5% of the market gone.
Yeah.
Then, let's be real, like, Verstappen locked in, Lando Norris locked in, George Russell locked in, like, you filter down. There's probably...
Well, the grid didn't change. That just shows you how hard... It's the hardest period in F1 history.
Yeah, so...
70-plus years
if you project, to get a seat. Project for next year, if we look at, like, what might be available just in a vacuum for Carlos Sainz, without considering, I guess, prestige of team or who might graduate from F2, if there is anyone, which I think you don't think there is... Or at least no one worthy. Whether they do is a different story entirely, but...
I think, one or two.
So, like, you look at the seats, like, we assume there's a fair chance that the second Williams seat becomes available. I don't think they'll get rid of Albon, but Logan Sargeant. If you look at Sauber, I don't know how long Zhou's got left.
Yeah, well, that would depend on funding. Well, I guess we'll see how the Chinese Grand Prix goes.
Yep. I feel like Alpine's pretty locked in.
It's hard to get a gauge on that, right? Like, given the...
Yeah, like, the cars will pile a ship and they've got two Frenchmen on a French team.
Exactly. And then they've got Doohan's the reserve, but then they've also got Victor Martins. They've got another Frenchman, so it's... Unfortunately, Doohan is probably not getting a go.
No, and actually, just a side note, Doohan was obviously out the track this weekend, did a little ceremonial couple laps with his dad. He was in some retro car and his dad was on a bike. I think... He was meant to drive some old Brabham car, but I think he might have crashed it the day before.
Oh. Well, I thought, was he driving like a 95 Benetton, or is it something else?
Sorry, Benetton. That's what he was meant to drive.
Oh, okay. Oh, he didn't even do that.
He drove it on the Saturday. Then I think something happened, air quotes. That's all I really
Somebody
heard.
Somebody stole it.
But you look, there might be one Williams seat, there might be one Sauber seat. Alpine, no. RB, like, who knows? But, it like, whatever. Haas,
I think...
maybe. But, again, like, I think they just want adults.
Yeah, that's the issue I have with, I guess, the projection of Behrmann going there.
To where?
To Haas, given the sort of Ferrari connection.
For who? Hülkenberg?
Well, I guess it's... I mean, it could be either, really.
I just, because he's older.
I bring this up every single time we talk about it. I don't know what Haas' motive is. Like, what?
Hygiene.
you didn't see the interviews, did you?
No, no. I knew he was on the coverage of 10.
He did the... he was on the coverage of 10, was he?
Yeah.
He did the... Gunther Steiner did the post-race interviews. And it was hilarious that, like... Each driver couldn't understand him. Charles was constantly like, sorry, what? he's back at the... Gunther Steiner back at the scene of the crime, too.
Is that where they...
the rock stars. Yeah. But yeah, it's hard to get a gauge on what they're doing, but I think after sort of Schumacher and Mazepin, it seems, although given it was a different regime,
Yeah, I think they just want adults.
They probably do, although it's, I mean, it's going to be hard to stop the Behrman hype train, albeit science. I mean, it does sort of, if I could speak to this for just a little, just the one moment. It's with respect to Behrman, he did what he needed, like what you should do in that car. It was a good achievement to be putting the car on short notice and then be able to pull off that result, yes. However, we've seen now that that car is definitely the second best car on the grid. And that car has now won the third race of the season. He would calm down. He still needs to cut his teeth in F2. Yes, there are capable drivers in F2. But I wouldn't instantly put him on like the next in line. That, I mean, he may be there, really, as the next in line. But I wouldn't say he's a clear out-and-out presumptive. He needs to be in F2. He needs to be in F1 next year.
Well, consider compare him to when Piastri was leaving F2, right?
Yeah.
Piastri was, like, pretty much a guaranteed F1 driver.
Yep. And he still sat out.
Yeah, and he still sat out a year. But if we look at, like, what are the F2 standings at the moment? Not that, like, again, those standings don't mean that much because it's just such a mess anyway.
I feel like, especially this year, the standings aren't necessarily representative either of what I would consider the prospect rankings as well.
Yeah, but Behrman's... Sorry, he got 2 points in the feature race.
Melbourne. But it wasn't... unfortunately, he got his... I mean, not unfortunately for him because he ended up becoming an F1 participant.
Yeah.
But he probably got screwed out of the weekend where he would have scored good points, right? So now he's 19th in F2 where he probably should be sort of somewhere in the middle. But I think the guys I would consider sort of F1 prospects, F2 at the moment, obviously Behrman, given his... given the debut for Ferrari, although, yes, granted, it was in a Ferrari. Victor Martins, potentially, although it's been a poor start to the season. But given the sort of the ties to Alpine, I would expect that he's probably going to replace Doohan at least as the reserve, but I don't know whether there's much traction. Again, you spoke to that. Ocon and Gasly seems pretty locked in. Unless they, like Alpine, just tear it up again and they want a complete overhaul, who knows?
Antonelli.
Antonelli, who is probably before Behrman had his day in the sun, right? Antonelli was probably the clear out and out prospect on the grid.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of that's like hype. There still needs to be a bit of substance there. Like, I guess the presumption is that he ends up in the Williams seat for Sargent, but it's like the pay drivers seem to stick around for longer than you want. Like, how many seasons did Lord Latifi get out of that Williams?
Three or four. A lot.
Yeah. So, and I mean, Joe will be going
three.
Into...
Three. 20 yeah. to 22.
Yeah. That's a long time. It's a long time, considering when you're thinking like that, the Williams seat, particularly where they were placed then, and I guess they're moving forward sort of now, that seat should be available to, like, the young up-and-coming driver for Mercedes. But it's just locked out.
Yeah.
But I get rolling back to Sainz in a long...
Oh, I was going to bring up one more F2 driver.
Oh, okay.
Brendan Nash.
Zane Maloney. Well, but the one thing I would say here is even if he wins F2, he is theoretically behind the previous F2 winner in terms of the Sauber Academy, because Teo Pourchaire won F2 last year, and he's notably taking the Piastri year, although it may be hard to see him on the grid next year as well.
Isn't he? He's racing somewhere else, isn't he?
I think he's technically their reserve. I'm not sure what else he's doing this year.
Oh, I thought I read that somewhere that he was like racing in like the Japan thing, but maybe not.
There's a couple of guys doing. There's, you know, they appear right in. All of those sort of, I don't want to call them support series, but the other series, the affiliated FIA stuff. But you don't want to be stuck like Giovinazzi was the Ferrari reserve for like 6 or 7 years, and the one weekend he wasn't at the track, Behrman gets a go.
but back on science.
Mercedes obviously makes sense, even if, what do? You take the year to really put George through the test against an incredibly seasoned, experienced race winner now, to see whether, you know, obviously George has been going up against Lewis Hamilton, but, you know, you put him up against Carlos for a year, see whether he's going to be the leader of the team moving forward that, you know, you sort of expect him to be.
Yep.
And then you make a decision from there. I mean, who knows, maybe Antonelli's not even ready a year after next, considering how long they sort of waited on George, when it was sort of, you know, guaranteed that he was going to drive the Mercedes eventually. I thought it was interesting, I'm not sure whether you've seen the quote from Toto where he was talking about leaving that second seat open for a young driver because they couldn't offer a seat to Max at the time, so they feel like they lost out.
When was
this?
I
mean, what, like 2015, 16? But it's like, you guys were the world champions. You had Hamilton and Rosberg. Like, you weren't going to give Verstappen the seat. That'd be silly. It's like, you know, my understanding was that Verstappen was pretty much Red Bull through. Yeah. But yes, again, Sainz will have a seat. I don't think anybody's really questioning that. I guess the other option is whether he goes to Sauber to replace either Bottas or Zhou before it becomes Audi. That seems like quite the gamble, because you don't really know what you're going to get there. But theoretically, it would be a work seat.
Yeah.
In 2026. He's proven himself now more than enough. Frankly, without the race wins, he was already proven to be a good, reliable guy that you would have on the F1 grid. Absolutely. I'd say Hülkenberg with podiums or with wins is what you call it. He's just, yeah, reliable, dependable, and shown he can hold his nerve at the front. It's really impressive this weekend.
Yeah. Apart from that, not much more on track stuff to talk about. Not that there was, we didn't really talk about much on track stuff anyway. Like a pretty sanitized race. What do you think of the penalty at the end? I've actually seen the footage. Honestly,
I think it, when you watch it like live, it's like, oh, George has sort of done what he did in Singapore. Again, parallels to the science race. But if you watch it with the telemetry, it's pretty clear that Alonso does sort of Alonso things. I mean, it's no surprise. No, but I mean, I say that in a good and a bad way. Like, this is what Alonso fights for every tooth and nail for everything, right? Like, that's the type of racing driver he is, and it has always been. Yeah. And that's what's made him so successful. And I mean, him parking the bus, you know, quote unquote or proverbially, is what he's done regularly in his most recent return to F1. But it's pretty clear here that he brakes at least once, possibly twice, on a corner that you don't need to brake that hard for. Like, he's braking for a hairpin on a fast right, and then that disturbs the airflow behind and then basically puts George into the wall.
And then on his side.
Yes. It's one of those ones where, yeah, if George doesn't crash, he doesn't get a penalty, but also, like, you know, you've basically...
You did enough to cause it.
Yeah.
It's like the late whistle in basketball.
Yeah.
Like, if he makes the shot, they're not going to call the foul, but, well, you missed, so you did enough to...
Exactly.
Too many basketball crossovers.
But it works. And it's like, well, you did completely ruin, like, George would have scored, right? Which just quietly doing another look at another win over, would have been another win over Lewis. So I think that would have made three out of three. Don't fact check that. No, I think it would. But yeah, it's. I find it interesting that like the it's similar to the. I'm not having a lot of fun with any of these narratives. I'm just that's what I'm making that clear. It's like the science one, the Ricardo, like the oh, George can't hold his nerve and stuff like that. Like this happened in Singapore and it's happening now. I don't think he would have overtaken. I think I've said this earlier. I'm not sure whether he necessarily had the pace.
Yeah, you did
to overtake. Like I feel like he was faster, but yeah. You need like a second worth of pace to complete it.
It's like every time you see like the when they break it down like the last four laps and it's like someone's been like 0.2 of a second faster like four laps in a row and then you look at the gap and it hasn't changed.
Yeah. It's just like you don't you need to just be the current era you need to be so overwhelmingly faster or have an insanely big tire advantage.
Yeah.
Or being a Red Bull to make an overtake. But yeah, I mean, not that, you know, George's time, and unfortunately for him, he joined Mercedes at the absolute worst time that he could have. I've said this multiple times, if he's in a Mercedes in 2021, I think Lewis is the world champion.
Yeah, he just takes enough points.
That year. He takes points that Bottas wasn't. And it's like he had... George had his own Behrman moment. We're forgetting the Sakhir race. Like, he would have won the race. The blunder wasn't his.
That's disrespectful that it's not a Behrman moment. It's just a... Behrman can only dream.
No, well, I guess the give and take there is that George was already he'd had one season, a singular season of experience in an F1 car, whereas Behrman is being asked to come up the
formals. But he'd already been an F2 champion, though.
George had.
Yeah, George.
Yeah. Well, F3 champion, so the double.
Oh, yeah, but we don't care
Leclerc,
about
Leclerc, Russell, and Piastri. We don't talk about it, but if you win both in successive years as rookies, it's hard to deny. And, I mean... Fittingly, I think everybody that's done that has been the F2 champions being left off the grid at the moment didn't win F3, and not that that's a huge thing, but it's like I guess it's just that extra thing that puts you over. It's like, yeah. Clearly you're so talented, but anyway, yeah, like Russell has won a singular race, but he also won the sprint on that weekend, so maximum from that weekend, 2022 Brazil.
Yep.
So what's I think people probably just don't like him. As he's maybe not as likable as some of the other characters on the grid. Maybe he's a bit vanilla.
I think the word is robotic.
Robotic, and then also like he.
With the rise of AI, you just can't trust him.
Well, there's probably another gripe. It's like all drivers on the radio are snitches.
Oh, yeah.
But it always seems to be George is the one that gets put on the broadcast.
Or Lando.
Yeah. It'd be like, oh, no, but the one where Lando jumped the start and George is like, oh, that's a jump start, it's a jump start. But they play like, they played his one where I'm sure everybody else is screaming about it.
It's even like, Lando, I jump started.
It's like, is it. I'm not sure people are like. Remembering the role of like the radio when you're the driver, it's that you're also providing the feedback to the pit wall, so you're pointing out everything. They're going to be asking you, is it raining? You're going to say yes, like raining on turn five, like it's coming down turn five. It's like you're going to be you are trained to point out everything, of course, and it's a competitive sport, of course you're going to point out like, oh,
hot girl in the crowd.
But yeah, every driver does it, but people sort of seem to have an issue with George about it. And it just seems like, yeah, he's the one kid that reminds the teacher when they've got homework due. It's like, Miss, you ever checked the homework?
Oh, George.
That's what it seems like.
It's like the, another track anecdote. It's like every, like, half an hour they'd bring up how, all right, guys, now because of some... a few bad apples last year, the FIA is reminding us that access to the track after the conclusion of the race will be strictly prohibited, which is okay. But the next part, when if we want to keep F1 in, if we want to keep F1 in Australia, we have to show the FIA that we can be well behaved.
It's like, guys, we are representing this school.
It's like we went on, I remember we went on an excursion to the barracks in the city when I was in year 10, the law barracks. And year 10? Yeah, it would have been year 10. And there's like all this gravel outside the front, all sand.
Yeah.
And someone drew a massive dick with their shirt. And it's like, well, we're not going until someone owns up to this. Who was it? Same kind of idea there.
I just quickly on the not on the track thing. It's like the danger is over when people go on the track. It's like
well, they went early last year, wasn't it? That was the thing.
See, I've heard, like sporadically, you hear it, like other races that they've stopped doing it. But it was always like an F1 thing. You know, you go onto the track after the race, you pick up a piece of rubber. But also for like the podiums and whatnot, like you see the shots at like the podium at Monza is over the track because it's meant to be all the people are down on the track.
Yeah,
and it just feels like an element of sort of old school.
Well, F1 speaking of,
is taken away.
Yeah, speaking of like going onto the track, pick up a piece of rubber. My dad used to work for a company that sponsored Jordan one year, and like so. Because Australia used to be the last race on the calendar.
You can say that he worked for Camel.
No, I don't. I don't think engineers work for Camel. A nicotine engineer. But, no, because Australia used to be the last race.
Yes.
On the calendar. So he was, like, with the company. So he's in hospitality at the Grand Prix one year. And he had pit access. And after the race, all the pit crew just start flogging all their shit that they're not going to need anymore because it's the end of the year. So he bought like pants, and so my sister actually wore these old Jordan pit pants to one of the days, and then he saw like he wanted to buy the front wing off one of the cars because like that obviously it was like scrap, it had broken off, but
yeah.
They were selling it, and someone apparently bought it and turned it into a bookshelf. But like
I've seen they do that with that's like an F1 run thing, right? Like I've seen they make like coffee tables out of like tires and
well that was the other thing, yeah, that you could buy a tire, like he saw someone wheeling away a tire one year.
Just that I bought this legitimately, I've got a receipt, but the way that you're wheeling it away.
Yeah, but yeah, just about going into the pits after the race and just buying some shorts off Guido himself.
So Jordan were hard up for cash. They would have taken anything.
Yeah, that was, I think they were sponsored by like 7-Up or something. They're like nice bright green.
Oh, at that point.
Yeah. This would have been like, I don't know, 90s.
So I don't remember like the yellow Jordan late 90s.
Jordan
famously won.
I'm assuming these were Jordan. Only because, like, I don't even know what they were.
Spa 98.
Yeah, 91. So, oh,
just for reference, don't type in Jordan 1998 in and expect to get what I'm thinking of.
Oh, well, I wrote Jordan F1 bright green.
No, I've got to put F1 because everything came up was obviously Michael.
Yeah, so yeah, the early 90s, Jordan was the green sponsored by 7-Up.
Yeah.
Nice. That's a car I like the look of.
Well, it's got paint on it. That's the problem with there's probably one thing that I would ask in terms of an aesthetic regulation is that you've got to have a minimum weight on your car worth of paint. Try and get some colour back in F1 so then all the cars aren't just carbon fibre. A bit of character back into on the grid, right? Like it's not like there's we're talking about like, you know, the green Jordan or the bright yellow Jordan. Like they're iconic, like you know, the cars weren't necessarily great, but they're iconic because you remember back to that period. And, you know, there was all the colours on the grid.
Yeah. I remember Fisichella in the bright blue Benetton.
That was the Benettons were nice.
Just big Fisichella man.
Even the early like the Alonso era Renaults.
Yep. Yeah. The baby blue, was it?
Yeah, baby blue and a bit of yellow. Like, at the time, it wasn't like you weren't writing home about it, but it's like.
It's also like the sands of time.
Yeah.
It's like I literally just bought like 3 retro Penrith jerseys last week.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, unless you have anything else from the weekend, do you want to ask about my experience on the track, perhaps?
Yeah, how did you fare in F3?
Yeah, well, it was a tough race. I got taken out by some other guy on turn 1 to lap 1, but I will say, as someone who used to really like the supercars but hasn't watched them in years, like properly, they put on a good show. they go for it in turns that, like, obviously the F1s don't.
Yes.
Because, like, the best incident of the weekend that happened in front of us was during the supercars. Because there's, like, 4 supercars races on the weekend, and they're all...
Do they race on Thursday as well?
I think so. We weren't there on Thursday, but I think they race every day. And they're all for points. They're all, like, championship races. And the, I think it was on the Saturday. Yeah, it was on the Saturday. Because obviously in the F1, where we were sitting, there's not really... It's more formation. There's no real moves that happen there unless someone goes wide into turn 13. And in the supercars, like, they're all bunched up, and this guy, like, shot for it around the outside, and the other guy kind of drives across him and cuts him off, and they mount the wall and they're all out, and it's all very spectacular. And one of the guys, the guy who got taken out, although there was some conjecture as to who actually caused it, but Cam Waters was the guy who gets out of his car and walks down to the other guy. And when we see him get out, we're like, well, he's not asking the other guy if he's all right. And he opens the door, gives him a serve, then slams the door and walks away. Because, like, in F1, usually when someone goes up to the other car, like, more often than not, they're like, are you okay? Like,
yeah, well, it's just, like,
the high-speed nature of it all.
The high-speed, the fact that you basically fight a pilot.
Yeah. But, like, there's obviously there's instances of, like, F1 drivers going at each other after incidents, but...
Not so much anymore.
Yeah, not as much anymore, but, yeah. Supercars, because they're all, like, just rev heads. Yeah, he wasn't asking how his day was.
It's a bit of NASCAR about it. It's a stock car racing.
He mounted the wall like a NASCAR. Where can... where can people find you, but, like, nowhere.
Nowhere.
Just the deepest corners of the internet.
Yep.
Well, yeah, you're just the recurring... It's basically the Tim Ray Show again now.
It is. Thank you for joining us. You can find us... not quite sure where this is available.
At all good bookstores. And all good post offices and petrol stations.
Yeah, I feel like I knew this wasn't going out to many people when you told me that you're circulating it at Angus and Robinson.
Oh, what a reference. It's actually at Dimmicks.
No,
I'll tell you what, it's going out at Sanity.
Oof.
I'm pretty sure they used to sell books as well as music.
Did they? I mean, do they even sell anything anymore? Are they done?
No. Oh, they're done. Although, there used to be one down the road from my work. I don't know, but that's obviously country town. They're still kicking around.
They're still good, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'd just like to make a personal plea that you can find me at Sanity.
But yes, obviously, as always, thank you everyone for listening. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow it on Twitter at BeyondTFence, beyondthefence.com.au. Thank you for listening. Say goodbye, Tim.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you next time.